Okay, we are recording at 9:27 a.m. Let's do a roll call. Dr. King?
Present.
Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton, you're muted.
It's muted, here.
Dr. King. Dr. Cornwell?
Here.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Here.
And I'm Judy Chappius. We're all here.
Okay, thank you. We are at agenda item 10C, personnel matters, executive director. Is there any discussion or do I hear a motion? I'll make a motion that we would like to make a verbal offer for the board executive director position to Judy Chappius for the compensation. Do I need to say the compensation, Mr. Harris?
Dr. King, members of the board, I think you can simply reference the amount that was discussed in executive session.
Okay, thank you. For the amount discussed in executive session with an anticipated start date of March 5th, 2022.
Second.
Any discussion or questions? Okay, hearing none, let's call the vote.
It has been moved and seconded to make a verbal offer to Judy Chappius for the executive director position with an anticipated start date of March 5th. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Okay. Should we move then into agenda item 9A? Right. Case 1718, Harold Hoffman, PT. Mindy, do we need a summary of the request?
Up to you. I see that Mr. Hoffman is on the call. Good morning, Mr. Hoffman.
Good morning.
Would you like a brief summary of where we are to this point, since it is a it is an older case, and we do have new board members?
Yes, please. That would be great.
I did provide in the memorandum a summary of the board order requirements for 1718, Mr. Harold Hoffman. It was executed on October 1st of 2019 and it expired 5 years later, a probationary period of 10-1-2024. Per the board order, there was a minimum of 3 years of probation that was required before Mr. Hoffman could request early termination, and that would be date 10-1 of 2022, so this year. In addition, he has not paid the $5,000 civil penalty that was part of the board order. In the memorandum, you saw a summary. He did complete the suspension. He completed the probie course. He passed the AZ law, and he has been undergoing monthly monitoring. I went back the last 7 months, reviewed the findings from the monitor, and he has been compliant without any recommended improvements based on the statutory requirements for documentation and standard of care. He has submitted a letter for your review that requested either modification of the current board order or early termination. I'm not sure if you want a summary of the findings of fact from the original board order, that they were contained in the board order. So that's really up to you.
I know we have some new board members, so I'll leave it to them. Would anyone like a summary of the findings of fact that led to the board action?
I reviewed it on the document, so I'm fine unless Mr. Barton would like to hear.
No, I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable with my review of it as well. I think I've got a decent idea of the findings.
Okay, great. Mr. Hoffman, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Absolutely. Okay. I'm sorry I'm coming to you from my car. I've got a lot of little kids. It's the only option.
So to summarize, your request was to change your monitoring from monthly to quarterly and to reduce the monetary fine from $5,000 down to $1,000. Correct.
Please. Yeah, or heck, if you want to take it all away, I'd be good with that too. Let's be honest.
I have a question, not for you, Mr. Hoffman, sorry, but for potentially Mr. Harris or Judy. When someone has a monetary fine from a board action, do they have to pay it all in one sum, or can it be paid over time in payments?
Judy, would you like me to, or do you want to?
Yes, please, Mr. Harris.
Dr. King, members of the board, that would depend upon the order. If the order isn't specific but just says perhaps, you know, somebody would need to pay a $1,000 fine within 6 months, I guess technically they could pay it in, you know, four installments of $250 as long as it was done within that 6 months. I think the agency, though, would prefer, and I think it's contemplated, that the penalty be paid in one lump sum. And that's why you give somebody a certain period of time recognizing the amount in question.
Thank you. Do any board members have any questions for Mr. Hoffman?
I'll ask one. Mr. Hoffman, how have you found this period of remediation for you?
Oh gosh, you know, it's ups and downs. You know, like at first I was angry, to be entirely honest with you. You know, I knew other people who in my same situation hadn't gotten as hard, or truthfully all along I felt like, gosh, I felt like almost part of a cult, like our fearless leader drove us, you know, into some stuff that the board didn't agree with. And so there was a lot of feelings of unfairness and things like that that I really held on to. And truthfully, it's been a process of forgiveness, frankly, even though I know it, you know, it's not like anyone necessarily did anything purposefully to hurt me, but letting go of some of those feelings was really challenging, frankly. And, but yeah, my monitor has been fantastic. By the way, if you ever need somebody to use, he has been, gosh, parts. He's just really helped me walk me through the process in a very thoughtful way. And I mean, I've learned a lot through the process. I've frankly worked my guts out. I even started a Facebook group that helps people learn how to use certain tools to improve and speed up their documentation. So it's been a growing process, frankly, and a lot of work.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
You're welcome.
Mr. Leone or Mr. Barton, based on your review of the case and the request, do you have any thoughts or comments or questions for Mr. Hoffman?
Yeah, I want to ask. Mr. Hoffman, just through everything that you've gone through in regard to this case, what are some things that you have done to kind of change your practice to ensure that you don't run into any of these types of issues in the future?
Sure. Thanks. That's a great question. Just being really, really thorough in my documentation, you know, and I'm part of that is just by default in that I have a reviewer who looks through things and who helps keep me on track and make sure that I'm in complete compliance. I'll say this too. I mean, one of the things I've done is there's actually a lot of online forums where people talk about issues of compliance, which I've joined. And I, you know, people are constantly saying, hey, what about this? What about that? Can we do this? Can we do that? And it's just made me really attuned to what's going on. And gosh, I mean, just from my experience alone, you know, it's like, hey, if leadership or somebody comes up with some concept or something that they want to push out, well, the first thing I'm going to do is go look at the Practice Act before I jump. You know, that was one of my failings ultimately. And so, you know, those are things that I have in place to ensure that I don't have any issues in the future.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'd like you to visit just for a little bit practice setting and how you've changed your practice setting and why.
Yeah. My practice setting, I've actually changed to, there was so much anxiety, truthfully, involved in that situation in outpatient for me that was just overwhelming. I mean, even sometimes I would cover for somebody in an outpatient setting here and there afterwards, and I would literally get anxiety. It just because of everything that I've gone through. And so I started looking around and I did some contracting at first. I did a little bit of work in a hospital. I did some home health contracting, and then I also did some industrial testing for blue collar workers. So I kind of went all over the place and got a different feel for what works. And particularly for me at this point, I would say that I left outpatient and went, now I'm in home health. But the reason is a couple reasons. Number one, there's less anxiety for me there, frankly, given what I went through. And then also I have four very small children who are four and under. I don't know if you noticed, we do foster care and adoption, my wife and I. And so we're getting up onto where we don't think we'll physically be able to take more kids. So we kind of wanted to pack them in. So they're all really quite young, and it allows for more freedom in my schedule to be at home and available so that my wife still loves me.
So, okay. Do you feel like being in the home health environment gives you the autonomy to make the decisions that you need to make to have ethical practice, whereas before that was a little bit of a challenge?
I hear what you're saying, and I will say that there is, I think you can say on almost like philosophical level, I think the outpatient setting does lend itself a little bit more for issues. There's a lot of pressure from above to bill certain hours and do certain things. And I found that I hated having that constant moral dilemma that I just didn't care for, frankly. And I hated that. But I think part of that really just comes down to leadership. I'm much more thoughtful when I choose someone who I work for at this point, based on those discussions that I have with them early on. And the guy who is our CEO right now, I mean, when you talk to him, you say, well, this is why we can't do that, or why we can't do this. And he'll say, well, you do what you know is right. And he leaves it up to me completely, which is how it ought to be. And so I appreciate someone like that who supports compliance and supports us even just keeping our conscience clean. And so that's been something I've really appreciated about my current company.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Hoffman, since the board action, have you practiced in a place where you are delegating and supervising others, and how has that changed since your time prior to this action?
Sure. The delegation that I've, no delegation while I would supervising, you know, a PT here and there. And I've just been, and they'll attest to it, you know, that I have regular conversations with them. They'll, you know, something will pop up here and then I'll be like, no, we have to refocus here. This is what you need to do. there's been some new PTAs who will come under me who have practiced and maybe under someone else. It's been a little bit not up to my standard. And there's some conversations to correct some of their thinking and to make sure that they're in complete compliance with what I believe is being compliant.
Can you give me just an example of what those conversations, how frequently they're happening with someone who you're supervising PTA, what that looks like?
Yeah. I would say, I mean, just constantly, you know, of course, if there's any issues here and there, I mean, I don't do a great deal of supervision, to be entirely honest. I'd say 90% of my stuff is done on my own. It'll be, for example, before someone sees a patient, I'll have them reach out to me. Hey, vitals were normal. Those are the big things in home health. Vitals were normal. Vitals are abnormal. Any issues? They'll text me and I'll text back. It's like, you go ahead, proceed, kind of a thing. Let's see, like just the other day, for example, someone was working under another PT and he kind of knows her protocols and his protocols, and he would kind of pass along, say, okay, this is generally what I want you to do. And my conversations are much more thorough where I will spell everything out. This is what I want you to do. This is how many I want you to do. This is how I want you to do it. Cause I'm like, I don't want to leave anything to chance. So that's right. What my conversations are like. I'm just extremely thorough with them anymore.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Hoffman, tell me about your current position. You mentioned in your letter you were in a leadership position of some time,
yes,
or of some kind, and that you're not involved in patient care. You anticipate ending patient care this year. What is your leadership position? And what does it involve? Are you still doing physical therapy? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I currently see physical therapy, I would say, about 50% of my schedule, kind of starting in the new year, so is patient care. Our company does home health, mobile outpatient, as well as on-site health and wellness inside of assisted living facilities. And I am in charge of the health and wellness program aspect of it, including the hiring and everything involved, the program development, liaising with leadership in various facilities and whatnot. So I do quite a bit of that, and they're expanding the program to a number of facilities in the near future, so much of my time will be pulled away from as much patient care of it as I've done previously.
And is that a position as a physical therapist, or is it more of a it sounds like it's more of a general management position, is that correct?
So, you know, there's a lot of the concepts revolving around, you know, our protocols. So, for example, we do a lot of false screenings and things like that within these facilities, and being the brains behind knowing how that works and whatnot. There's certainly some component of my physical therapy education that's still involved in that position. That makes sense.
Okay.
Though specifically using my license per se in that position, maybe not as much, if that makes sense.
Got it. So you don't necessarily need to be a physical therapist in that position. It's more of the experience, is what you're saying?
Yeah, not necessarily, but I mean, there's certainly some clout that comes behind having that license, for sure. Yeah, it's,
okay.
Mr. Hoffman, if we move to even changing at all monitoring, then what patients will you be seeing and documenting on to submit for assessment and monitoring? How will that work?
Yeah, I mean, I would just let my boss will be flexible, and I'll just say, hey, I'll have to at least maintain. Currently, I do at least 3 charts every single month, and I'd have to tell him that I'd have to do at least a minimum of 3. Which I mean, ultimately he would understand, you know, though for me it would be ideal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Mr. Hoffman?
So Mr. Hoffman, as it currently stands, if we did ask you to continue monitoring, would you be doing those 3 monitoring notes, for lack of a better word, in addition to the full-time responsibility you have as a manager of this company? Or would that be part of your other job responsibilities?
Well, I would probably make I'd probably make accommodation for it in my schedule. I'd have to move some things around ultimately. It might cramp the schedule a little bit.
Okay. Tell me, Mr. Hustler, the $5,000 fine, why specifically are you asking for that to be expunged or removed? Is that just a financial burden? Can you tell me a little bit about that burden?
I mean, my feeling, and I hope this came across in the letter, is, I mean, the financial ramifications of what I've already gone through have been substantial. And the somewhere between $40,000 to $50,000 is more of an estimate, and I tried to lowball it, frankly. It's been, and then I think I mentioned there, if the point was to kind of hit me so that I understand this is an issue, believe me, the message has been received. You know, I don't know if further financial ramifications are ultimately necessary from my standpoint. I mean, who knew going into it that it would be that burdensome?
Okay.
Dr. Cornwell, do you have any thoughts?
No, sorry. Nate, it sounds like you, in the relatively near future, you could be 100% administration.
Possibly.
Is that correct?
Possibly.
Do you see yourself not renewing your license?
No, I think I'll always need to, because especially as things expand and grow, there are times when you need someone to be flexible to see patients and things like that. And so there'll be times when I'll be covering for other physical therapists, or as a new building opens up, for example, maybe we haven't been able to hire in time to get the staff in place. So I suspect, I mean, overall, I wouldn't be surprised if I use my knowledge, my license on a fairly regular basis, though not, you know, intensely, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone feel comfortable making a motion considering the request?
I'm not in favor of ending the probation before October. I feel that 3 years, given the severity of the complaints, is warranted. I feel that he probably has put out a substantial amount of money, given what he's shared with us. I'm not opposed to reducing his fee, but not eliminating it. And I would be, with 7 months of very good monitoring results, I would be in favor of going to quarterly monitoring for the remainder of the probationary period.
Karen, do you want to make that a motion?
Sure.
I was hoping you'd say that. Okay. Mark?
Oh, I was just thinking, what reduction in the financial penalty would you ask for? He's asking for $1,000.
I can live with $1,000.
Okay.
Do you have a number that you would prefer?
No, I'm good with that. I'll second that emotion.
Okay.
And Dr. King, members of the board, to be clear, as I understood, Dr. Bastille, your motion was to offer Mr. Hoffman an amended consent agreement, and the amended consent agreement would note the following changes: going to quarterly monitoring for the remainder of probation and reducing the administrative fine from $5,000 to $1,000. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Harris, just so that I understand, when we discuss quarterly monitoring, is that the same number of charts that will be reviewed and monitored, or is it that we're reducing that to 3 a quarter?
You know, that's a good question. Let me take a look at the consent agreement to see how that was initially worded.
And while he's looking, I'll just want to clarify that, Mr. Hoffman, we haven't received the monitoring reports on the 10th of every month. I don't believe we've received February yet, but I would want the board to, I'm looking at the timing and I'm thinking, I would receive a report in March, a report in June, and a report in September, and then he could potentially request at the October meeting for early termination. So he'd essentially have 3 monitoring periods quarterly.
That sounds really good, Mindy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with respect to Mr. Barton's question, the documentation review doesn't specify. It merely says that on a monthly basis, the monitor shall review Mr. Hoffman's charts, billing records, and supervision. So I suspect it would just go from monthly to quarterly, but all other terms would remain the same. So it would be every.
So we're only looking at 3 records versus 9. We're not looking at a cumulative record review for the quarter.
Three over the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we can make that clear in the amended consent agreement as well.
Okay.
No, I would need one for, just to clarify, I'll need one for this coming second quarter, third quarter, and then fourth quarter. Okay. Got it.
March, I would receive report March 10th of 3 records.
Okay.
I would receive one June 10th, 3 records, and September 10th, 3 records.
Oh, okay.
So it would reduce the compliance burden by essentially 2/3.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I have received the January report that did include, so I don't know if the board would accept the January report as the quarterly for March.
Ms. Bastillo, I guess it's your motion, so.
Yeah, I honestly, we should have February because it should have already been due and given. And
okay.
I also feel that because we're here at the end of February, we should have March one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Hoffman, I'll need, in March 10th, I'll need a new review.
Okay.
And then the quarterly will start in Q2 of 2022.
Mm-hmm. Final 2 quarters.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Is everyone clear on the motion and the details in order to vote? Okay. Judy, do you want to reread the motion and details so we can take a vote, please?
Yes, please. If anything needs to be corrected here, please do so. It's been moved and seconded to offer an amended consent agreement to modify the monitoring requirements from monthly to quarterly and to reduce the civil penalty from $5,000 to $1,000. Does that capture the entirety of the motion?
Mr. Harris, do we need the details in there to move quarterly starting Q2 of 2022?
Sure, if we can have the motion reflect that. Thank you.
Okay, just for detail. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, then let me reread that. So it's been moved and seconded to offer an amended consent agreement to modify the monitoring requirements from monthly to quarterly starting in quarter two and to reduce the fine from 5,000, reduce the civil penalty from $5,000 to $1,000.
And Dr. King, for the civil penalty remains to be what it was in the initial board order? Okay.
Right. Yeah, deadlines will remain.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Hoffman.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman.
Okay. We are on agenda item number 9B. It's an initial hearing for John LaDuciere. I'm wondering, 2107 is the case number.
LaDuciere.
I'm sorry, what was that, sir?
LaDuciere.
LaDuciere. And thank you, Mr. LaDuciere is on the call. And Mindy, do you want to give us a review?
Yeah, I just want to ensure that the board is aware that Nicholas Meza is Mr. LaDuciere's attorney, and he is present. Good morning, Mr. Meza.
Good morning, everyone.
This case was opened. The complaint was filed actually by, at the time, Mr. LaDuciere's employer, Select Home Care, and I'm not sure that somebody, I understood there was going to be a representative from Select Home Care on the line or on the meeting today. Mr. Checo, are you available? Is there anybody representing Select Home Care? Okay, let me proceed with the summary. The employer filed the complaint alleging that Mr. LaDuciere documented treating a patient on February 23rd of 2021 when the patient was off-site with a family member for a medical appointment. After the employer approached Mr. LaDuciere about the discrepancy, he then removed the signature from the AM time and placed it on the PM time. There was no patient signature to verify the visit, and facility logs have no documentation of Mr. LaDuciere's signature for that day. Following my interviews, additional documents were requested under subpoena from an employer that Mr. LaDuciere had also worked with simultaneously as he had with Select Home Care. And collectively, when I reviewed those documents, revealed that the discrepancies in the billing and documentation extended beyond the original complaint. And that's summarized for you in Exhibit 6 on page 222 of your file. Mr. Meza and his client, Mr. LaDuciere, did have an opportunity to review the draft investigative report. They provided a response to that investigative report, and that was attached as a supplemental document in total for your review. This case is for your review. This is an initial review.
Initial review. Yeah. Mr. LaDuciere, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
And Madam President, I know that John has also prepared a written statement as well, if it's appropriate for him to read that now.
Yes.
Okay, so good morning. First, as you know, my name is John LaDuciere, and I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to say a few words regarding the allegations that are made against me. I take these claims very seriously, and I take full responsibility for my documentation errors and now recognize the areas for improvement. I've already made changes in my practice and record keeping as a result of this process. However, I want to assure you that I saw all of the patients in question on the days as I recorded. I never billed for a visit that I did not conduct. My errors lie in my documentation, not in fraudulent intent. To begin, I've been practicing as a licensed PTA in Arizona for 10 years. I've worked as home health PTA for 4 years. I've never been disciplined by the board or any other state board of physical therapy, and this is the first complaint filed against me. I am very passionate about my role as a PTA in bettering the lives of my patients. The allegations made against me are largely based on the time-in, time-out records reported for various patient visits. However, it's always been my understanding that home health visits and billing are not dependent on exact time entries. during my initial shadowing with a supervising physical therapist with Select, I asked questions about the requirements for documenting time in and time out. The supervising physical therapist specifically told me that time in, time out entries are not a billing requirement. She told me it's only needed to record time in, time out in order for software to function. Going forward with this understanding and believe that time in, time out notations were used only for internal purposes and as a function of the software. I was never formally trained or instructed on the use of the record keeping software or billing. Up until the complaint, I never received any feedback or criticism from my employer, Mr. Allen, or any other supervising physical therapist suggesting that I was inappropriately documenting time in, time out entries for my patient visits. Therefore, I admit I was estimating my visit times, and due to these estimates, these appeared to be overlaps in the visit. However, each visit was in fact conducted. Regarding the visit with patient DW on February 23rd, 2021, I understand that my documentation was not acceptable and did appear to be sloppy. I acknowledge that I entered the incorrect times for this visit. However, I maintain I did treat patient DW in the afternoon on February 23rd, 2021. My handwritten notes that were taken on that day and the documented vitals confirm this treatment. It would never occur to me to lie and fraudulently bill for a patient that I did not visit. In terms of my inadvertent failure to sign the logbook at patient DW's home, I am not always asked or directed to a logbook when entering group home. I now understand the importance of signing in, and since this issue came to light, I've made sure that I sign into all group homes. However, it is important to note that during Mr. Allen's interview with Ms. Richardson, he agreed with my statement and admitted himself to failing to always sign in and out of home. Finally, I want to address my reported conflicting statements regarding DW's signature. I do not remember who signed DW's record. Given the number of caregivers available to assist with signing after I enter the home to treat him on the date in question, Mr. Allen contacted me asking for an explanation regarding patient DW's visit on February 28th. And on March 1st, I told him that I was unaware of exactly who signed on February 23rd, 2021. I explained what I believed may have happened on that date and what I know has happened in the past. Patients and caregivers have accidentally signed the incorrect record, which later needs to be corrected with a paper form. I was offering a potential explanation for what occurred, as that is what was requested of me by Mr. Allen. That being said, I admit that I do not remember who signed for patient DW on that day nearly a year ago. The reason the record, including the original signature, was deleted and subsequently corrected was because I had entered the wrong patient information in the wrong record. Once I recognized this error, which I hypothesized occurred due to the change in visit time, I contacted my supervisor and asked that I be given access to the note to correct the information, which I was given. I never anticipated that this correction would be viewed as fraudulent behavior. In closing, I completely understand the importance of accurate and thorough documentation. I also understand that poor documentation without explanation may suggest fraudulent behavior. However, I never billed for a visit that I did not conduct. I now recognize the importance of documenting the proper times for each and every visit. I see that such entries can be used to substantiate and cross-reference care I provided. I ask the board to consider my 10-year history of compliance and the explanations I provided during the investigation as it considers its next steps. Thank you again.
And Dr. King, real quick, if I may add just one quick point. Obviously reiterating what John stated here today, but we know that documentation errors and shortcuts are a very common violation among PTs and PTAs. I think John really recognizes that. He recognizes the need for him to improve in this particular area. In fact, he's taken steps to improve this part of his practice on the whole. This event happened a long time ago, and I would really point the board's attention to the evidence that is available that was created at the time of this event, right? And really, it's John's handwritten notes. If you closely examine those handwritten notes, you will note that vitals are placed next to the applicable patient DW's name, which is his standard practice. And so, again, we're really relying on that in addition to obviously all the other explanations that we've put forth in John's response to really hammer home that John saw this patient, right? The documentation is, there's no question, needs to be improved. There's no question that it should have been better on that day. But again, any allegation or inference of fraud, I think, can be rebutted by the fact that we have a handwritten note that clearly demonstrates that he saw this particular patient on this particular day. So I'll ask the board to consider that in addition to what John noted, his otherwise unblemished and clean record over the past decade or so of practice.
Thank you. Board members, do you have questions for Mr. Ledesier?
So I have a question for either Mr. Ledesier or his counsel. I'm looking at the handwritten note, and I'm curious, is there, or do either of you have any evidence that this note was actually made contemporaneously with the visit? Are there other vitals from that day that would be consistent with the vitals you recorded that would give us some kind of evidence like that?
I'm not sure I understand the question completely.
Go ahead. Mr. Barn, I believe you're asking whether or not we can corroborate the other vitals that may be on that handwritten note with the records. We didn't have the benefit of being able to cross-reference and pull records from a prior employer, right? I would have asked, and I think we pointed this out to Mrs. Richardson as she conducted her investigation, that indeed these vitals would have matched other records for patients that have been seen on that day. John, if you can go through your standard practice of what you do every day when you see patients or what you would have done to explain the marks and the colors and the like on the particular handwritten note.
And let me add a question while you're responding to that. How do we know those marks were made on the day that they say that they were made? Is there any other, right. were they emailed to somebody? Where were those notes kept? How do we know those were contemporaneous notes? That's the question I want to answer.
The notes. Yeah, as far as email, there would never have been a reason that I could think of to email some of these vitals. But it was just part of the reason why I'm writing everything down is because sometimes with this particular software, the time in, time out in the software has to be placed with the date. Has to be placed first in order for any of the information to be saved. So previous to using this, everything was on the paper. So it was more of an automatic thing for us to write down a few things like vitals that are obviously the things that need to be more accurate and are easy to forget when you're at the end of the day. And no, we can't prove that this was not something entered later. Basically, it's the way I do this. And
John, we would contend that we could, right? In fact, if there was a cross-reference of the handwritten notes with the EMR for the other patients that are listed on this, and we provided Mrs. Richardson with an unredacted version of this, and I don't know that there's any mention of that cross-reference being made, and we did not have the benefit of pulling patient records from a prior employer.
Correct.
Now, my understanding is that DW was in a care home. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, in a group home.
Did that group home take any vitals that we could match?
They may periodically do that, but I don't think it's fairly standard unless it's a very large group home that has nursing. Associated, and they may have nursing associated there, but I don't know.
The Mr. Ledeser, the notes, the handwritten notes that you make, are those submitted to either a supervisor or an employer or any other people that you work with, or are they for your personal use?
They're for my personal use, uses documentation later in the day. We've never been asked to submit our notes other than what we put in.
Got it. So you submit what is on the electronic record, and then you keep these personal notes for your own personal use?
Right.
Okay. And how are they maintained?
I usually keep them 6 months before I begin shredding.
Okay. So you have some kind of a filing system where you maintain these for?
Yeah.
I presume this.
Because there's patients' names and information, and I keep 6 months roughly before it's shred.
I would just like to add, there was conversation related to pursuing a cross-reference of using this handwritten note with the original records. The reason I didn't pursue that is that based on the interview, I'm looking at the investigative report around 1955 on the tape, Mr. LaDucere and myself had a conversation about how he was using that record, that handwritten note. And in interviewing him, he's not consistent in how he uses it. So I didn't pursue it because he doesn't always write the hand vitals on his worksheet. He crossing out the patient doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't see the patient. So I wasn't convinced that I had an accurate record for that date, and there was no way to then verify that. So I didn't pursue it.
Understood.
But it wasn't even verified even in that instance. So, I mean, they didn't even bother to check in that instance, which I think is critical to our position, right? And that could have been discounted very easily, our claim. Cross-reference was.
I'd like to make one comment on that also, Mindy, is that the initial part of my record keeping is made the night prior. I'm making appointments with the patients. And if I cross a line out, that can be an assumption that I may not see that patient. But later in the day, I can get a call from them. They may turn my voicemail, and I may, in fact, go and see them later. But you're correct. You know, I don't update that a note as, for example, to use as verification. It's just, that's it. It's just, I'm using it to put down some notes for that day. And if I do go see them, then of course somebody who's crossed out, is going to be in my later in my documentation.
Mr. Ladisor, I'd like to ask you a few questions about what you shared about your lack of understanding of the importance of time in and time out, and that you stated that you estimate those times. How then do you track the number of units that you need to bill if you really haven't actually accurately tracked your time with the patient and documented that time?
In any of the softwares that I've ever used with home health, there are no units. It's basically, and this is what was explained to me, is that it's the patients are in on a per visit basis. So whether it's a minimum of 15 minutes up to an hour, it's per visit. That's also how we're compensated, is per visit.
So your understanding is that
as a unit, like you would do in, for example, in skilled nursing, which I'm also very familiar with, it is completely different.
So what I'm hearing you say is that your understanding is that whether you spend 10 minutes with a patient or 90 minutes with a patient, it's one unit per visit billed to that patient's insurance for your time as a PTA with them. Is that what you're saying?
That's my understanding. Yeah. And I've been told by not just one physical therapist that as far as what's an appropriate amount of time, and I've been told in a couple of instances, they don't want to hear a call coming from a patient saying, I don't spend enough time. Make sure I spend an appropriate amount of time with them and make sure you get it done. Answer their questions. Be sure that you're not overproducing if a patient is also feeling, you know, again, these are home health patients and they do need to be considered homebound. And so a lot of the patients do not have the ability to withstand a long treatment session. Sometimes they don't feel great. So we can, at that time, make sure we get their vitals and also spend some time with them with patient education.
So how do you determine how much time you're going to spend with a patient then? What drives that decision for you?
Mostly them. It's going to be mostly based on how, you know, are they going to be able to tolerate.
Where does the PT's plan of care come into play then for you as far as that goes?
Yeah, well, we cover the plan of care. However, again, if they're not tolerant of a care, or they just say, yeah, that's enough for me today, we have to go by that.
So in the plans of care that you're following, you've got your plan of care, your frequency and your duration should be clearly documented as the plan. Do you have an understanding of that for each patient you're seeing, what the PT has recommended as the frequency and duration?
No, there isn't anything in there that there the frequency is there, but there isn't anything that recommends duration. There are times when we'll get a secure text within the group that'll state something to the nature of this patient has very low tolerance.
So when looking at your, like some of the things in the report from Ms. Richardson, and you had kind of alluded to documenting and not really concerned about overlapping time because your time in and time out was not something that's important to you. Can you just talk me through when you're documenting for two different companies, two different patient treatment sessions, and you've documented the exact same time and pretty much the exact same date and time for two different patients. Nothing about that comes up like concerning for you?
Well, I did not see anything in Ms. Richardson's report that said these were the exact same times. There were some overlapping times. So when I'm doing one company, I'm going through the documentation as many times. I'm trying to hit the 45-minute intervals that was mentioned to try to hit, and it's mostly for an internal office procedure. When I'm doing a I'm done with that company. When I do another company, I'm not monitoring it as much as what my times were with the previous company. I'm just doing this company now, so. It doesn't surprise me a lot that there were some overlapping times because, again, I'm thinking more about how that software works. And I know that we can't do overlapping times within one company, for example. I know it hasn't allowed me to do it, but I think that changed later on. Initially, I would get a little red alert that would say I can't use that time because an occupational therapist is already documented those times. I'm like, great, that's when I was there. So that's something we've always had to kind of work around, is trying to work around the other disciplines' times that they're indicating in there also.
And to be clear too, Dr. King, I know, you know, it's not that John doesn't care about the times. I think that there's also, you know, we've made clear in the written response as well that from the applicable employers that these are time frames that are, they're approximations of when he might have seen these individuals given the preparation the night before, right? So it's not that one doesn't care. It's that the time in, time out weren't a critical component as communicated to him via his employers and per his plan the night before.
There are a few that are specific, same two different patients on the same date at exactly the same time. So not all of them are overlapped. Some of them are actually look as though they were potentially a co-treat.
Was that the patient DW?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. King, I have a motion. I'd move that we forward this to an informal hearing. We've gotten a lot of information, and I think getting people under oath and moving this forward is probably the best way to go.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Ms. Richards, just regarding the evidence at an informal hearing, and this may betray some ignorance of the process on my behalf, but can we actually reach out to DW and invite her to be present at that hearing and or interview her regarding
DW?
Yes.
DW has dementia. We might be able to interview the son. We might be able to have the supervising physical therapist who I did interview, we could request him to.
Okay.
He was aware.
I did see your interview with supervising therapist. I was more wondering about David W. or given her impairments, maybe her son, if we could reach out to him, I guess.
I'll reach out to the son and ask if there's a possibility that I don't believe from what I understand that DW has the capacity to be able to have a memory or recollection of, especially
of anything. Yeah.
But I can talk to the son.
Thank you, Mr. Richardson. That helps.
That was something I wanted to clarify too. That I had, as reading through the information that you gave under the complainant's statement, it had mentioned that they did an investigation. I just wanted to verify that that was them who did it, not anything that you had done.
No, I had information from Mr. Allen that he had completed his own investigation because he was a supervising PT.
Okay.
And then Select Home Care also did an additional review of the issue.
Okay. So, because one of the things I'm wondering here too is, I mean, obviously it's not reasonable to be able to ask the patient, you know, was Mr. Law or you know, actually there considering her state, but was there anybody potentially on the premises that may have actually seen LaDuceur go in and treat that patient during that time frame? I mean, I think that would be an easy question to ask and get verified and, you know, take care of what it is we need to know regarding this.
And just for the record, I think DW is a male.
Yes, DW is a male.
Okay. Oh, okay. Apologies.
You were requesting that I contact the assisted living facility and see if they have any record or any, because he didn't sign the log, so we know that. So now it would be just based on
verbal confirmation, yeah. And I don't know if Mr. LaDuceur, you know, can specify, is there anybody within that facility who would have seen you there going into the patient's room and working with them, you know, that if we were to contact them, we would be able to get a statement.
Possibly, but this was a year ago, so it's, you know, whether they remember it or not, I'm not sure.
And members of the board, I think that, you know, we would actually implore the board to do that cross-reference on these records, right? Because records don't forget. And to the extent that we can do a cross-reference, very clearly stated that there are inconsistencies in the time and the overlap. We've clearly admitted to the fact that not every visit is a signature log is performed. But I think that the medical records and the handwritten notes, to the extent that those can be reviewed, I think would really shed a lot of light on this particular case.
Mr. Greer, if I can just clarify your motion, because the investigative report indicated ARS 32-2044-5, ARS 32-2044-13, and 14, there was an additional to consider ARS 32-2044-12, failure to adhere to recognized standards of ethics and of the physical therapy profession. So I wanted to make sure you only wanted those three, or did you want to add that into the informal hearing?
Add the last allegation as well.
For so, okay.
And I think it's clear based on the investigative report, but I do want to clear we're talking more just about patient DW. We're talking about the other issues. I think they're on page 242 of our materials.
Yes. I'm not sure who seconded, but are you okay with amending your second to include?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any more discussion?
And if you do wish additional investigation, if you could clearly articulate so I know exactly before we go to present the material for the informal that you have what you need. I have that I'm going to talk with the son of DW. I have that I'm going to try and obtain verbal confirmation from the assisted living facility where Mr. DW resided. But I'm not clear if you are requesting, I know Mr. Mays requested a cross-reference of for that date, I only have that one day of the handwritten note that Mr. Legisaire referenced. If you want me to subpoena all of the records, because it's two companies, all of the records associated with that, look at the times and verify that those times are consistent with his handwritten note.
For that particular day?
That's the only handwritten note I have.
I think that would be very helpful to at least me. It is, if we do cross-reference that, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
And Dr. King, so I'm clear as well, and my apologies for interrupting. Was there an additional violation that was added with respect to ethics? I just want to be clear, so I have that for my notes as well.
Yes, sir. The additional violation was ARS 32-2044-12, Standards of Ethical Conduct by Physical Therapist Assistants 7D.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to call the vote.
Just for clarification, Mr. Harris, with the board requesting additional further investigation, can this all be wrapped up into one motion, or does it need to be a motion to further the investigation and to move on to informal hearing?
Good question, Judy. Judy, Dr. King, members of the board, we could do it in two motions. What we want to make sure is that Mindy has sufficient time to conduct the additional investigation, that the professional and counsel are given an opportunity to review it and respond to it so that when it is scheduled for the informal hearing, you have all the information that you deem necessary in order to make an informed decision. So why don't we, with that said, if everybody's okay with it, let's break it up into two motions. One, to direct Mindy to conduct further investigation, and once complete, then a second motion to schedule this for a informal hearing. And if you'd like to combine the two, that's fine as well.
Okay, so should we vote on the motion? Should we make a motion then to add investigative additional investigation, then they can then vote on the motion to move to informal hearing, or does it matter which way we go?
That would be preferred, Dr. King. Thank you.
You want me to withdraw my current motion, Mr. Harris?
If you don't mind, Mr. Greer, then perhaps making a new motion.
I will withdraw my original motion, and I will move to instruct staff to conduct additional investigation as discussed in the board meeting.
And if we could have a
second. Call the vote.
Okay, so the motion on the floor, and do we have a second on that motion?
Yeah. Bustillo.
Thank you. So it has been moved and seconded to request staff perform additional investigation as instructed in the board meeting. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. That motion passes.
Just for clarification, who did the second on this motion, Dr. King or Dr. Bustillo?
Bustillo.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dr. King, I would move that upon completion of that investigation, we forward this matter to an informal hearing.
Second.
Thank you.
And that is to include all of the ARS as well as in the addition of ARS 32-2044-12.
Correct.
Well, thank you. Any discussion?
Ms. Richardson, how long do you think you need to complete the investigation?
Well, given my other investigations, I would say 2 months.
Okay. And so
the April council meeting, I could potentially tee it up in the April meeting.
Okay. And do you think you can get that to our respondent counsel and his counsel with enough time for them to respond? I don't know how long they think they need to read that and file a response as well.
I think I could probably get it to him the beginning of April, so we'd have a couple weeks before the deadline for you to receive your materials for them to respond.
Okay. And Mr. Meza, do you think a couple of weeks to respond would be sufficient time for you to address whatever information we provide and file a response?
Yes, sir. I believe so. Mrs. Richardson was kind enough to provide an extension on our last supplemental response due to the volume of materials in there. So I believe given this limited, albeit there's going to be more information, I think we can get a response out in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Mr. Harris, then do we need to change the motion to add a specific date for this hearing, or do we just reschedule it to?
Mr. Barton, Dr. King, members of the board, I think what will happen is, you know, once Mindy has finished her investigation and sends it to respondent and counsel and they submit their additional information, she'll work with Judy on scheduling the informal hearing, if that's okay with the board. So maybe, you know, sounds like it might be April. If April doesn't work, it will be the May meeting, that kind of thing, if you're okay with that.
That works for me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, let's call the vote.
It has been moved and seconded to, upon completion of the further investigation, to remand case 2107 to informal hearing to include ARS 32-2044, subsections 5, 12, 13, and 14. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Castillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Lottizer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, Mindy, do we need to stop recording and re-record, or are we good?
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Okay, we are stopping the recording at 10:38.